We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Welcome in to the RotoWire NFL podcast for Thursday, November 14th, brought to you by Yahoo and Yahoo Daily Fantasy Sports. John McKechnie, Mario Puig, hanging out with you on this Thursday, getting you ready for week 11 of the NFL action. So we're recording a little bit earlier today, so this will be out before the Browns-Steelers game. We're not going to get into a full breakdown of that game, but Mario, any lean on this one here? It's a pretty pivotal matchup for these two teams.
Yeah, it's really gross, though, because both teams obviously have profound issues on offense, and the Steelers' defense especially, maybe it's not the most reliable in the league, but it's one of the most explosive in terms of just size, speed, disruptiveness, blitzing, stuff like that that can make it go really badly for Baker Mayfield if the Browns' offensive line plays like it generally has this year. So, I don't know. It's like, I really don't want to, I can't believe I'm in this position where I'm having to seriously think about picking basically Mason Rudolph's team over Baker Mayfield's. Is like, I just can't really, my brain can't really cope with that general thing. So I'm just kind of going haywire trying to think about it at all. But I guess I have to lean Browns because I just don't. I mean, James Conner, if his shoulder's okay, he could maybe carry that whole offense for a game like this because the Browns' run defense hasn't been so good. But I don't know if the Browns' run defense will be bad specifically against Mason Rudolph, where you approach the whole game with, you know, not as much fear for the pass. And their corners on the Browns' defense can run. So I guess I'll lean toward a scenario where it's like both defenses generally dominate most of the game, but maybe it comes down to quarterback play at some point, and maybe Baker Mayfield being 10 times better than Mason Rudolph matters. Maybe it won't. I have no idea.
This is heinous. And to say that I'm backing the Mason Rudolph side of this is, it feels wrong. But I'm also, backing the Mike Tomlin side over Freddie Kitchens.
It's like
there's my checkmate, basically, is what I'm saying there. So, and Tomlin, despite his just innate desire to challenge pass interferences, even when it's so clear that they're not going to get overturned, still a far better coach than Freddie Kitchens. So that coupled with the defense, like you said, it's a really explosive defense. If they can cause the turnovers that Baker Mayfield and company have been prone to this point in the season, then I do kind of have to give the lean to the Steelers, at least to cover the 3 points on the road.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I really have no position in it, so I can't argue against anybody picking the Steelers. It's like, if I could, I would just keep my hands off this one. But I'm hoping for, as always, a big game from Nick Chubb, as much as it's hard to really see it. I think that Pittsburgh defense is going to play pretty tough in this.
Yeah, I think so too. So I'll be fired up Minka Fitzpatrick in the IDP league last week, and that worked out extremely well. Hopefully he can make some big plays again.
He could have worse matchups, you know. It's like I still say that Baker Mayfield's really good, but I don't know if there's really any quarterback that can play well on that team. The way that offense has played this year, the way they haven't been coached up on basic, really simple, fundamental kind of details. And, you know, when you can't do that, it really doesn't matter how talented, you know, in theory, your personnel might be.
Exactly. So that's been a huge overarching thing that's been working against the Browns throughout the course of the season. Before we dive into the rest of the Week 11 slate, we got a message from our friends over at Yahoo. The NFL season is in full swing at Yahoo Daily Fantasy Sports. There's a million reasons to enter the free Yahoo Cup on Daily Fantasy, and they're all dollars. That's right. Yahoo Cup is free to enter, and a perfect lineup will win you $1 million every week of the football season. It's as easy as entering the contest and picking your players. If you're over 18 and a United States citizen, there's no reason why you shouldn't take your shot. Yahoo Daily Fantasy Football has new contests every week with guaranteed cash prizes. Even if you don't score a perfect lineup, you can still walk away from a game with a little cash. Choose Yahoo Daily Fantasy today. Get started now at yahoo.com/dailyfantasy. So Mario, we're going to start out by keeping things in the AFC North here. We got the Ravens playing host to the Texans. The Texans coming off the bye. This, I believe, is one of the better matchups that we'll see all week. This matchup will have huge implications for what the number two seed, maybe even the number one seed in the AFC, is going to look like here. So Baltimore, the home team here, they are 4-point favorites. What are we looking at in this one?
Well, it's interesting because I don't think that either team has played a team quite like the other. And that's not just, you know, with respect to the quarterbacks, who are, of course, the most interesting subjects here. This, you know, might be along with, you know, Russell Wilson and Mahomes, of course, these are two of the very best quarterbacks in the league. And either defense has various things going for it, but especially the Ravens, their cornerback rotation. Recent weeks, you know, maybe going against somebody like Watson is a test that maybe exposes them a little bit. They haven't been tested that much. Ryan Finley, I think, is pretty terrible, for instance. So maybe Watson kind of matches or exceeds them, but Marcus Peters really changes the fundamental look of that pass defense. And Jimmy Smith, so far, so good with him too. And that's made Marlon Humphrey free to be like the slot guy slash, I assume, They'll use him as an outside shadow occasionally too, but it's not an easy matchup for DeAndre Hopkins, Kenny Stills, anybody in that Houston offense. And maybe the run defense is the weakest part of the Ravens defense.
I'd agree with that. Michael Pierce got hurt this past week. They had to sign a couple of veteran defensive guys to plug up the middle here, including D'Amato Pecco. So
okay,
excited to see him.
Yeah, that's not so great because their run defense was not good to begin with.
Right.
So yeah, maybe Houston, and I, if this does come down to this, I have to think this favors the Ravens, but I think Houston might look to try to get Carlos Hyde going in this game, maybe even a little bit more than usual. I'm still a hater, so I think that's generally a bad policy and one that suits the Ravens just fine. The Texans, they have like a pretty decent run defense, at least, or, you know, before the Watt injury they did. Who knows if they regress in that respect. But the pass defense, aside from Justin Reed, I guess, and Bradley Roby, there's a lot of vulnerability there. They've picked up off waivers Vernon Hargreaves, who the Buccaneers cut, and that was after trading a third-round pick for other first-round busts, Gerrion Conley. I don't think anything's going to work at outside corner. Roby's doing pretty good, but I think if you just put Marquise Brown outside, and they, as long as they don't shadow him with Roby, that's a clear green light for Marquise Brown. And even if they do shadow him with Roby, I'm still taking Brown, I guess, to win that. Reed, I don't know if Reed and McKinney and those guys are going to be tough for Mark Andrews, but those guys looked good last week. And generally, and especially on the outside, the Houston defense is pretty weak against the pass. So as long as Lamar can do pretty good as a passer, I think we have reason to believe no one in particular can contain him as a runner. So the way it's worked the past few weeks, I think should more or less remain the case for the Ravens, and so I'd probably pick them to win.
Okay, all right, that's a good way of laying it all out. I think, you know, the Texans have a strong run defense, and that, like you said, their pass defense has been pretty shaky thus far. They're fifth worst in the league when it comes to fantasy points allowed to opposing quarterbacks. And, you know, when it's Lamar Jackson in action, it's a totally, you know, different way of answering the questions on what you can do with your defense, because, you know, you might be stout against the run, but in a more conventional sense, not really against what Lamar Jackson brings to the table. So I think that Baltimore will probably need to get some success going on the ground to really open things up in the pass and attack that outside, like you mentioned. If Marquise Brown, I don't know if he was practicing as of Thursday. They always just kind of keep him in like maintenance routines at this part of the week, though. So, I mean, I think he's going to be okay.
He looked back last week.
Yes, and, he did.
I don't think there was anything different about his practice routine last week.
Okay, so things, it didn't feel like there was any sort of setback or anything necessarily, but something to keep an eye on, of course. And I don't know, I think overall Baltimore's offense will continue to keep rolling here. It really just comes down to can Watson make enough plays against this Baltimore pass defense? I think that's going to be the story of the game here. But with Baltimore being the home team, I give the edge to Baltimore.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't realize it was a 4.5 kind of spread here. I guess that sounds about right to me. And I think Watson can, you know, take over any game. But the same is true about Lamar Jackson, and it's in Baltimore. He's just got the better team generally, I think, and certainly the better coaching.
So 2 years ago, I went to this Ravens-Texans game in Baltimore. It was a Monday night game. And going into that week, I also went to the Ravens-Packers game the week before up in Lambeau. So real world traveler here, seeing, you know, exotic Baltimore and Green Bay. I was expecting at the beginning of that season to be able to see Joe Flacco versus both Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson. But with the way that the injuries played out that year, I got to see Flacco versus Brett Hundley. And then Flacco, I think, versus TJ Yates.
Oh, cool.
So that was awful.
That wasn't good.
It was bad. So I'm thinking that this time around, when it's Lamar Jackson versus Deshaun Watson, should be much better this time around. Clemson versus Louisville, they used to have some battles back in the college days too.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I think Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson are better than TJ Yates and Brett Hundley.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, this should be better than those games.
Looking forward to it. Let's move on over to the Panthers versus the Falcons. This is an interesting one. The Panthers, 5-point favorites at home. I think what the Falcons did last week is a complete mirage. I think if they had one game in them for the whole season to like empty the clip and really go for it, it would be on the road against the Saints. I don't think that they're going to carry that over whatsoever into this matchup. I think the Panthers can squash them.
Yeah, I guess as much as I'm a Kyle Allen skeptic, I would have to concede that this should be a pretty easy setting for him, because this Atlanta pass defense is it's reached the point where you can just tell, like, there's a level of dysfunction with the team where nothing is going to get fixed. Like, it's just too, they basically lost their grip on just keeping it all together. And so with that, I think they're kind of descending into that sort of Freddie Kitchens kind of territory, where it's like, you know, maybe things would be better if you had good players, but probably not. And
yeah.
Also, guess what? You don't have good players either. So their pass rush of all things came alive against the Saints. But I guess I should mention, I just look at a game like that and I have to believe it just doesn't really mean anything. Granted, it could mean something. I just have no idea what explanation there is for something like that happening.
It'd be, for me, it'd be less about giving the Falcons a ton of credit and more being like, Sean Payton, what were you doing? Like, yeah, what, you had a bye week. Like, what? Come on, man.
Yeah, I definitely am inclined to leave it at, you know, Payton, one way or another, whatever way it is. I guess you could say they didn't run the ball enough. I don't really get it. It just, to me, still seems more likely that the Falcons are bad and that the Saints screwed up.
That wiped out the entire rest of the Pentathlon survivor pool.
Yeah, I can
Everyone's
believe
done.
That. Yeah, yeah. That's why we all should have been saving the Ravens, I guess, because that was the only people that probably survived, right?
I would say in general, but in that specific, you know, 14-person survivor pool, that wiped everyone else out.
Yeah, so in any case, I think Kyle Allen and DJ Moore will be really chalky in DFS, but for very good reason. Might almost be kind of like the Christian Kirk kind of play for this week, in that, you know, it's not predicting specifically 35 points or whatever, but that, you know, he might be 30% owned, and you maybe just, at least in cash games, you'll maybe want to get DJ Moore out there. Curtis Samuel, of course, I think he's really good too. It's just the Falcons make it so easy for opposing passers, and DJ Moore tends to have the easier targets between himself and Samuel. So if there's no resistance and there's an easy play to make, it's like, I think it would generally be Moore before Samuel.
Yeah, Moore's been doing 10 targets per game over the last 3 weeks, and he's been doing about 8 yards per target in that. So he's been really effective and efficient over that course of time there. So going up against the Falcons, I think that's total green light. And of course, McCaffrey enters the week as RB1 once again.
Yeah, on the Atlanta side, that Hooper injury really sucks. He's out 4 weeks with an MCL sprain. Don't think there's anything worth chasing at tight end there, but also, I guess I have to admit, I don't know who they have at tight end otherwise. Were they like the team that picked up Luke Stocker or something stupid like that? Anyway, I think with Hooper out, with Sanu traded,
something called Jaden Graham.
Oh.
I'm not familiar with the stylings.
That doesn't sound like a real person.
That's me.
But yeah, I think with Sanu traded, with Hooper out, it's going to be this kind of thing where Russell Gage kind of gets some usage funneled toward him, because Julio's always going to be double, triple teamed, whatever. Maybe it's not the greatest matchup for him generally. I don't really know. But Gage in the slot, he's the main low depth of target kind of guy in that offense with Hooper and Sanu gone. And I think he could push just something like 10 targets with Hooper out. And I don't know if I'm going to go at it in DFS, because I don't think Gage is good, and I am worried about Ryan kind of just laying an egg in this one, but it's something to think about, because that offense was dependent on Hooper and Sanu specifically. Those were the two leading targets, I think, for along with Julio for a long time, so there's a big void there in addition to the Freeman injury. So Brian Hill probably going to take the workload there. Kenyon Barner might do something. Maybe Kadre Ollison is active after being a scratch for pretty much all of this year, but the Panthers' run defense is pretty bad, so as long as Ryan doesn't lay an egg, then it should be a spot for Hill to put up some respectable box score.
Give the listeners a bit of a background on Brian Hill, if you will.
Well, he was a good player, really productive player at Wyoming, and he left as a junior. So even though Hill's been around a long time, he only 5 days ago, turned 24, so he's still in the prospect kind of category. He was a fifth round pick who they cut and tried to put on their practice squad during his rookie year. The Bengals claimed him. The Bengals cut him, and the Falcons picked him back up late last year. And he had a couple nice plays last year before kind of just hanging around as the third running back for most of this season. So he started behind Ito Smith on the depth chart, but I don't think there's an obvious case that Ito Smith is a better prospect than Hill. Hill is more of like a workhorse type than a pass catching specialist, but looks pretty much like an average, maybe slightly above average kind of athlete who basically might be pretty good at just running between the tackles, because he did that a lot at Wyoming and put up huge numbers, including like early on in his career.
Yeah, he and what's translated thus far, and obviously we're in a small sample as far as this year is concerned, but picking up a lot of yards after contact this year, and scored 22 touchdowns his last year at Wyoming before going pro. So pretty impressive numbers and production during his time at Wyoming. So knowing his prospect profile and getting the sense that he's going to at least get the first crack at being the main running back while Freeman is injured is enough for me to go after Brian Hill and waivers.
Yeah, he should be owned in pretty much all 12-team leagues, I think, because he could be a top 10 running back this week. There have been much worse prospects who have made, you know, meaningful fantasy impacts in the NFL.
Like, I like him better than Wayne Gallman.
Oh, yeah. I definitely would put Hill ahead of Gallman.
It's like a little baseline there. Anything else for this game before we move on?
Not really. I just, the Falcons suck.
Yeah, so don't fall for last week. Like, I think what we've seen from the Falcons through the first 10 weeks of the season or whatever it was heading into last week is the real Falcons. I don't think that last week is really indicative of what this team is going to be down the stretch. Let's move on over to the Cowboys facing off against the Lions. There's no line on this one. I guess Stafford's still dinged up with that back injury. So dinged up is probably putting it lightly in terms of what he's dealing with.
Right.
Obviously, if he's out, that changes everything for this game. Dallas needs to come out and win this one. That, you know, I thought that they were, they really needed to win last week against the Vikings, and they let Kirk Cousins, who's like famous for letting down in big games, come in and beat them.
Yeah, Dallas is a poorly coached team, but so are the Lions, so I think Dallas will beat them. The question is just what kind of fantasy production might there be in this game, and I don't know what's going on with Stafford, by the way. I thought every other time I've heard of a quarterback having a back, like a broken bone in their back, it was always the transverse process thing, which usually you could just kind of put a flak jacket on them and they play through it. But he didn't play through this, even though he plays through tons of injuries. So it's like it must be something different than the transverse process. I don't know that for sure. I just can't find anybody mentioning transverse process. So yeah, if it's not, then that just sounds like a bad, really bad thing, like broken back. Like how does, and it seemed to like creep up on them. It didn't really seem to get announced as such until late last week, or actually before the game. I think he wasn't an obvious out candidate last week before he just suddenly was on Sunday, if I remember right. Jeff Driscoll did a pretty good job, I thought. Kenny Golladay dropped a few passes in that game, and they weren't necessarily the greatest on-target passes, but Driscoll really looked a lot better than I would have expected based on his college career. He was always super toolsy, and he's, you know, shown a lot of poise in the NFL. I think he's a better player, better prospect than Ryan Finley, who the Bengals basically cut Driscoll and then spent a fourth round pick to acquire. So
both can move around a surprising amount.
Yeah, Driscoll can really run. He could probably play wide receiver or something if he wasn't playing quarterback. But against Dallas, they're such a weird team in all aspects, but that does include the defense, where they've got some really good pass rushers, some good players up in the front seven, but they just never really seem to add up the way their sum of talent would lead you to think. So I definitely think Dallas can be beat, and I think Driscoll can do a solid effort against them. But yeah, still, I definitely believe in Dak Prescott. And the question, I guess, for me comes down to, will Dallas's offensive line fall apart without Connor Williams and maybe without Lyle Collins? So that's the left guard and the right tackle. It would be weird if they did fall apart against the Lions of all teams, but as bad as their pass rush has been, they do have some big guys who are capable of being disruptive, especially if they're maybe going against some scrubs. But Xavier Suofilo should replace Connor Williams, and I assume Cameron Fleming, if necessary, would replace Lyle Collins, and both of those guys have played a lot, even though they're backups. So as long as Dak Prescott doesn't have to deal with unreasonable pressure, I think he's just a really good player. And also, I guess if Amari Cooper can be taken for granted, which I don't know, he hasn't been practicing, I don't think.
So what was your favorite Dak Prescott meme, music being played over the hip loosening dance?
I didn't click on any of those, but yeah, when I saw that on the broadcast, I was just like, what the hell is he doing? It's like, this is going to be a meme, isn't it?
Yep, and you were correct.
So yeah, that didn't take long. That was pretty absurd looking. Just felt like I was having a concussion or something.
Collinsworth like over like voicing it over, like, look at him go and pop his hips. Oh my.
I mean, it looks pretty ridiculous, of course, but maybe there's actually something to it, because he is making a lot of those kinds of throws this year that you really only see from Mahomes otherwise. It's like there's some sort of like cork revolution going on with quarterbacks right now. That's kind of weird. But yeah, Dak is playing at a really high level. The line's got two good corners in Darius Slay, Justin Coleman, but the pass rush has been so bad. Even those guys are getting beat. Rashawn Melvin, super easy to torch at the other corner spot. So
what do you make of Randall Cobb then?
It's interesting. He makes some nice plays this year, but
he looks like he still has something in the tank, and I did not think that the last 2 years.
Yeah, he has something in the tank. I think it's safe to say that Dak Prescott is just better than Aaron Rodgers as a passer, and Randall Cobb, he might have been better in the past, I don't really know, but he's more or less a guy who kind of just rides the wave. He doesn't really raise the level of the offense or lower it. So when Dak's just playing great like he has been, Cobb could contribute. Not as likely as, of course, Cooper and Gallup, but got to keep an eye on the Cooper thing. The knee is apparently an issue. I would expect he'll play, but just got to follow up on it, I guess. And Gallup, I think, would generally be left on Rashawn Melvin, and I think he could just open all day.
That's Gallup 9 times out of 10 there, and going up against him. And then regarding Cooper, yeah, if he is good to go in this one, he looks like the kind of guy that it doesn't matter who he's going. I mean, that one drive where he made several of those tightrope sideline catches, those are just like, you know, only a handful of people on earth can do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, particularly that one touchdown. It was just like,
that's silly.
This ball is like 6 yards out of bounds. How did you do this? So yeah, he's really playing at a really high level. It's kind of funny. I know some people have taken the L on it, but not so many people reporting to take their L's for that trade. And don't get me wrong, I thought it was overpayment, but when people were like, Cooper sucks, this is such a stupid trade, I was like, wait a second, when did Cooper start being bad? Did I miss something?
Right, so those people need to report for their L.
Most people were just like, this guy sucks, Jerry Jones is an idiot. It's like, Jerry Jones is definitely an idiot, but Amari Cooper, maybe overpayment aside, very good. I don't understand how that narrative ever got any traction. But yeah, I think if Cooper's able to play as good as Darius Slay is, Darius Slay, I generally would project as the loser to Cooper, and especially if he has no pass rush, giving him a fair shot in the first place.
Yeah, that would be really killer if Dak has all day to throw there and Cooper is good to go. That's going to be a long day for that Detroit secondary. Let's move on over to Indianapolis going up against Jacksonville. Indianapolis coming off a loss to the Miami Dolphins. you hate to see it. We've been backing Indianapolis as a team that's, you know, maybe short on talent, but long on good coaching for this season.
So
but,
short on talent by now, though. Oh, yep, man.
It's just completely, you know,
trash.
It doesn't
team.
Even look like a 53-man NFL roster at this point.
Trash receiver rotation, I should most specifically say. The team has a bunch of good players at various spots, but, Zach Pascal, good as he might be, as much as he might be a really good player for what the Colts do, he's more like a wide receiver 4 than a wide receiver 1 that he's been miscast as with T.Y. Hilton and Devin Funchess out. Devin Funchess is not coming back this week, even though he's apparently back in practice. So it's going to be Pascal again. Whether it's A.J. Bouye or Trey Herndon, I don't think it really matters. I don't think he gets open against those guys unless they basically screw up on the play. And Chester Rogers, not so good. He's the slot guy. I don't see him doing anything here. Who was it that... Marcus Johnson played last week in the Deion Kane role, basically did the same thing as Deion Kane. So I just think it looks brutal with T.Y. Hilton, Paris Campbell, Devin Funchess all out. Brissett, I think it's safe to... I owe Brissett an apology, basically, because I thought Hoyer could more or less match him. That was wrong.
Okay, yes. So apology is floated out there. So, Jacoby, if you're listening, please.
Yeah, apologies to Jacoby, but especially a big finger wag at Brian Hoyer. Grizzled vets are supposed to be better than that against the Dolphins, buddy.
Come on, man. And then you're going to let Ryan Fitzpatrick show you up like that.
Yeah, so not great. On the Jacksonville side, Nick Foles coming back is pretty interesting. I do think he's probably... Obviously, he's not as good as a runner, and he's a lot less creative as an improviser than Gardner Minshew, but I do think that he's generally the better quarterback overall, which that's really not saying... That's not to specifically put Foles at a high level or like slight Minshew. Minshew's a rookie, so it's just hard for pretty much any rookie to be as good as a, you know, Super Bowl winning quarterback, even, yep. even if he's not among the best Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. He's certainly no Dilfer or anything like that. So I think Foles is pretty good. I think his return, maybe, I don't know if it really affects the receivers so much. D.D. Westbrook, don't know what the deal is with his injury. He obviously missed the last game out and was replaced by Keelan Cole, who did pretty well.
Cole looked good.
Yeah, with D.D. Westbrook dropping so many passes, that actually might be something to keep an eye on because, I don't know, Cole's maybe better than him. Westbrook, fast.
Not as toolsy, but...
Yeah, Westbrook's fast, but it's like if you keep dropping passes, what is it worth?
Yep.
So it looks like Westbrook will be back. It'll be interesting to see if Cole can maintain any playing time. Maybe they reduce like Conley's snaps a little bit and move Westbrook outside more often and have him do the speed decoy. I don't really know. But Cole really might be a threat to steal some snaps from Westbrook if things keep trending this way, I guess.
Yeah, I think that he's on like the deep PPR radar at the very least now because he did look good in Westbrook's absence last week. And then as far as Foles goes, and this more has to do with me drafting Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold as my two quarterbacks in the NFFC, but I am a happy Nick Foles owner now.
Yes.
As of last week during the bye week, scooped in, and I will be starting him this week.
Yeah, I like the setup for him. It's nice that it's in a dome. It's nice that he's going against a team with, I don't know what the latest is on Pierre Desir, but the Colts have been going with basically two rookie corners without Desir in the lineup. It was Rock Ya-Sin, who isn't doing great this year, and then Marvell Tell, who they moved from safety to corner, and he had a good first start. I don't know how he did last week off the top of my head. It looks like, this is weak. Colts haven't updated their injury report page, so I don't know what's going on with Desir, but if he's out again, as good as Marvell Tell might be, it's like putting him against DJ Chark, putting Rockus in against DJ Chark, that's just a rough spot for those guys to be in, and I definitely think Chark should get back, not specifically predicting a big game, but I'll be pretty disappointed if he doesn't, reestablish himself as like a viable top 15 sort of fantasy play.
Yeah, because Ya-Sin, for like being a kind of like that classic Temple tough type of player and physical, that's all well and good, and like that helps him against a guy that's as big as DJ Chark, but it doesn't help that also DJ Chark has legitimate speed at that size too. So I think he wins that matchup more often than not.
Yeah, they're probably going to give a lot of help to Ya-Sin and Marvell Tell if necessary, but Chark's just one of those guys. He's so fast, can jump so high, and he's shown ability after the catch on underneath targets this year too. I just think he's a wide receiver one, and I think Foles stepping in bodes well enough generally that we should just kind of expect good things from Chark again.
And if I remember correctly, I think the Jaguars made that decision on Foles last week, so he's been working with the starters, so he should be ready to hit the ground running there. Before we go on to our next batch of games, I got a message here from our friends over at Armchair Quarterback. Armchair Quarterback is a real-time game where you predict the next play during a live football broadcast. You know what the next play is going to be? Predict it and earn points, climb the leaderboard, and increase your chances to win tickets and other prizes. It's the perfect way to make watching games more exciting. We have a special league for all RotoWire subscribers, and we'll be posting the leaderboard online and be mentioning them here. This week, we're playing to the Chiefs-Chargers game on Monday night. You can also form your own league with your fantasy friends. The full schedule and game information is available at armchairquarterback.com. Armchair Quarterback, make every game bigger. We also get a message from our friends over at World Fantasy Sports. Already knocked out of your survivor pool? Do you end up losing early in the season, feeling like your success is based mostly on luck? Wish there was some alternative where you can use your actual fantasy sports knowledge as opposed to relying on whether a team wins or loses? Well, now there is. World Fantasy Pools brings you the first of its kind game type, stat-based survivor pools. World Fantasy Pools takes the traditional concept of survivor pools that players are familiar with and adds in a more exciting twist. Instead of choosing a team to win a game, you will use your fantasy knowledge to choose an athlete to achieve a designated stat line. Achieve that stat stat line and you advance. Fail to, and you will be eliminated. Be the last to survive or make it through all rounds to win or split the prize pool. Just choose one athlete each round to achieve a designated stat line to advance and win. It's that simple. Sign up and play today at www.worldfantasypools.com. All right, let's keep things rolling here. We got the Bills facing off against the Dolphins. Bills coming off a disappointing, kind of head-scratching loss there in Cleveland this past week. And the Dolphins, lively. Two wins in a row. They have a winning streak.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I'll just blame the rest of the league for being terrible rather than giving the Dolphins too much credit on that one.
I'm good with that.
They're trying to lose, and it's. I think maybe that's just more the insightful details. Like, they're trying to lose, but they're so prone to failure, they just can't stop winning now. Because you can tell they're trying to lose. I think that's quite seriously the most charitable read on any team that leaves Kalen Ballage as their like workhorse running back in an NFL offense. You're trying to lose, or I have to assume something much worse about you. Like something like maybe, you're just not all together. Like there's something you can't possibly know what you're doing and seriously, earnestly conclude this Ballage guy looks pretty good. I think we should give him some more chances. And I think even they will eventually get just so horrified by how bad Ballage is that they'll start giving some snaps to Patrick Laird and maybe Miles Gaskin.
We're looking at 2.1 yards per carry over a 55 attempt sample.
He's the worst running back I've ever seen. I'm not even kidding. I've never seen anything like it. He can't play. It's too bad, but Arizona State was right 4 years ago or whenever that was, where they almost moved him to defensive end. They should have done it. He might have actually been like an Anthony Barr kind of player if they had moved him to defense, but Miles Gaskin, I actually think, is pretty good. Laird is kind of interesting because he can definitely catch the ball well. I just don't know if he can do anything else. But Gaskin, you know, he's not toolsy and he's small, but that kind of production in college just is difficult to do unless you have some level of skill. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it was as a true freshman putting up huge numbers. So maybe he has a limited ceiling, but I think he has a lot of skill set to work with, even if he doesn't have much in the way of tools. Whereas, of course, Ballage has a lot in the way of tools, but the worst skill set that I've ever seen. So not that it really matters so much for this game. I expect Buffalo to pretty much rock them. And I say that as a, you know, critic, skeptic of Josh Allen, but he's been really good in fantasy because of the rushing production. I don't think he's been very good as a passer. And I think that the Bills lost last week because they threw the ball too much. And Devin Singletary, he's definitely like the lead back there, I think. Frank Gore is still playing. But it's not Frank Gore that was the issue for Singletary last week. It's that the Bills don't give him enough touches per snap. And 2 weeks ago when he had his big game, he had like 20 carries on 40 snaps. Generally, he's been getting 10 carries per 40 snaps, something like that. They reverted back to that last week. Allen threw like 41 passes or something. They should really try to get it to 30 passes for Allen in a game, try to get Singletary over 15 carries in a game. And since they failed doing what they did last week, and since it worked 2 weeks ago, I think they go back to Singletary more this week and probably throw the ball a little less.
They can afford to workshop some things in this matchup, you would think.
Yeah, and I think they want to win. They want to make the playoffs, and they, I think, have compelling reason to think that they might blow it if they keep throwing the ball as much as they did. And I think Singletary is the clear, you know, way out for them. I think they'll go to him this week, and I think he'll have a pretty good game.
Okay. And then on the other side of the, or before we move on to the Dolphins receivers, anything to like from this Buffalo passing game, or do you think that it's just going to be such a run heavy game plan that, that guys like John Brown maybe move off the starting radar?
Well, I think Brown is just kind of going to be like a, you know,
is what he always,
wide receiver three flex kind of play where you can imagine a big game, but you shouldn't really get your hopes up specifically because it's just not really the way the offense works. But I think Brown, Cole Beasley, they're going to have good matchups in this game. They should get open. And it could also be one of those things where Josh Allen throws the ball less, but does more with it. Like maybe he only throws it 28 times, but maybe he throws three touchdowns because they're, you know, rolling and just kind of get the Dolphins defense against the ropes. So yeah, I think the touchdown odds are as good as ever. It's just I wouldn't expect Allen to throw 40 passes in this one.
No, that would be overkill, or something would have gone very sideways if Allen has to throw that much. So, yeah, I'm looking for the Bills to take care of business in that one. Let's move on over to the Vikings going up against the Broncos. Vikings at home, 10.5-point favorites. This is a lot of points to give Kirk Cousins, but the Broncos, pretty bad. So,
yeah.
So that's a tough one.
Yeah, and I know the Vikings defense, especially at corner, they've had all kinds of issues. But these guys in Denver, Cortland Sutton aside, are just not that threatening, in my opinion. And I think it's safe to say that I'll try to pull up the running back stats here, but I think it's safe to say that even through their struggles, the Vikings' run defense has been pretty good. So, yeah, they're
bottled up Zeke pretty nicely, I thought, for the most part last week.
Yeah, definitely. And Eric Kendricks alone pretty much shuts down any pass catching.
He's having a crazy good year.
Yeah, you can't really throw to your running back against the Vikings. It just doesn't work. Philip Lindsay, Royce Freeman, they're good running backs. Lindsay especially can go long on some play if somebody just slips or botches their gap, whatever it is. But I'm inclined to kind of just think that the Vikings, from being in Minnesota, from going against a team that kind of suits their tendencies anyway, as great as Cortland Sutton is, and he looks awesome, going against just Cortland Sutton and not having to take anything else too seriously, you can probably contain him. You can probably keep him to whatever, 60 yards and a touchdown on 10 targets or something like that, and then still hold the Broncos to 10 points, 13 points. And I think that'll be the case in this game. There's nobody in that offense aside from Sutton who can pose a consistent pass-catching threat. I know Fant had the big game against Cleveland, but I'm giving the Browns all the credit for that one.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that'll happen here, and I think Brandon Allen will crater, and Minnesota definitely going to be my main DFS defense this week. I think they could light up Brandon Allen pretty badly.
Yeah, it's just going to be a brutal, brutal spot for him. I thought one of the more interesting developments from last week's game, as far as Minnesota is concerned, with Thielen being out for that one, and I think Thielen is probably going to be out.
Yeah.
And that they should just hold him out through the bye week and just get him healthy for the stretch run. But Kyle Rudolph and Irv Smith both looked pretty good against the Cowboys. Maybe that says a little bit more about what the Cowboys do against opposing tight ends. But at the same time, when your non-Diggs receivers are BC Johnson and what's left of Laquon Treadwell, I think you have to kind of change your reads over to the tight ends a little bit more. And Rudolph looked awesome. I mean, that one-handed catch or whatever it was in the back of the end zone was really good. Irv Smith, obviously an interesting rookie tight end there. So mm-hmm. I think both of those guys are also on the radar for this week, if not only for DFS. I think Rudolph probably you can start in 12-teamers. Irv Smith probably more like the two tight end type of leagues.
I actually think, at least in PPR, I would put Irv Smith ahead of Kyle Rudolph, just because he kind of is the wide receiver too, with Adam Thielen out, him and BC Johnson, I guess, more or less splitting that. But I really do like Irv Smith a lot. I'm definitely putting him in some tournament lineups in DFS this week. And it's not just the general theme of, well, the Vikings should win by a lot, and it should be a comfortable sort of game where pretty much everybody is doing well, and it's more who's the guy who gets the ball around the end zone that determines who has the good game, rather than somebody dominating. It's like Cousins is going to have easy throws to make. I think some of them might be to Irv Smith, especially if Chris Harris shadows Stephon Diggs, because as much as Diggs can beat him, and Diggs is great player to own season long, makes plenty of sense in DFS, of course. But Chris Harris is just a really good corner, and it might not even be a thing where Diggs fails to get open as much as just other people get open easier than him, because literally any other spot in the defense is more vulnerable than Chris Harris is. So if I think that the Vikings are going to win by a lot, and especially if I'm in a lineup where I'm maybe fading Dalvin Cook, I want to get somebody like Irv Smith in that lineup. Alexander Mattison, I think, makes plenty of sense as a tournament.
I was just about to bring him up. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the Vikings should try to limit Cook's workload in this game. There's no reason to attempt disaster with his history of hamstring issues. He could literally just be held out of this game, and the spread should probably still stay around double digits. Like, Mattison can do enough for the Vikings to win by 10 points. So I think him maybe getting 10 to 12 carries, Cook maybe topping out at something like 18 carries would make a lot of sense. I would actually try to get Cook less work than that if I were them, but he's just a cheat code, so it's understanding that it's hard to go away from him for very long.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, so yeah, Vikings should win by a lot is basically what I think. And I really like Irv Smith as a tournament play, not just in terms of like fading Dalvin Cook in a tournament lineup, but I think he could be their leading producer as a pass catcher too.
Okay, that's definitely an interesting potential plot line from that game. Probably a game that I'm not going to be paying a ton of attention to. I mean, unless somehow the Broncos, who have been frisky at times this year, somehow are keeping this one competitive, I'll probably be keeping my attention elsewhere. Speaking of games I'll be keeping a closer eye on, we got a 50 over under here in this Saints Bucks game. This one should be one of the more fantasy intriguing games of the afternoon window on Sunday.
Yeah, maybe there's something to say for the weather in a game like Baltimore's, where I guess it might be a bit windy. But yeah, otherwise, I don't know why this game would be projected higher, or at least I feel like the floor
is 50, and then Baltimore's 51.5. I misspoke there.
Oh no, I didn't. Sorry, I totally missed it. Actually, I was just being ADD and going back to, well, this is also a high scoring game. But yeah, I would have put Houston Baltimore higher if, and I assume that the reason it's not higher is basically because Tampa should be an easier setting. Like, I guess it might be a little windy potentially in Baltimore, but man, I feel like the floor is lower with this game than it is in the Baltimore Houston one, because Jameis is just the most ridiculous player. He's so,
I love it,
stupid. And I don't think Peyton will blow it 2 weeks in a row, so I'm not actually worried about the Saints side, but I am a little disturbed. You know, it's like, how can you make something so simple so difficult? Last week, like, you should have just beat the Falcons. They suck. They didn't even do anything in the game. Matt Ryan had a bad game. Nobody ran for anything. How'd you even lose? Like, how did you pull it off? And again, I think Sean Payton will have a better game plan here. Certainly Michael Thomas poised for a huge effort in this game. But it's tough.
Are you going to lock him in everywhere? Because, I mean, we've talked about like the funnel effect and how the Bucks really good against the run, and by virtue of that, really terrible against the pass.
Yeah, so on the one hand, it feels like Kamara has to happen soon. But this matchup is really difficult to do so as a runner, so I think he could definitely do this, but I think he'll need to have a big game as a pass catcher if he's going to have one of his, you know, memorable outputs. So as much as he's capable of it, I don't like the setting enough as like a reason to suspect it happening in this particular case. And yeah, Michael Thomas, I'd have to put the over under on his receiving yardage at like 125 or something, and he could go for 200 yards in this game.
Oh my goodness.
He could maybe break the TO reception record against the Bears or whatever it was when he had like 22 catches.
Did Brandon Marshall catch him?
Oh wait, yeah, my bad. I'm so old, I forget when. I still think Corey Dillon set the rushing record. I don't remember Jamal Lewis breaking it.
I was at that game.
Yeah, that was the best game, best performance of all time by any player.
And he also called it, yeah, by calling it.
Right. I very specifically remember like being awake at 9 or 10 a.m. watching the ESPN countdown show, and you know, Tom Jackson and Chris Berman or whatever, and they're like, oh, Jamal Lewis today, you know, very deadpan. He didn't seem to be joking at all. He didn't. He just very matter of factly said, like, oh yeah, I'm going to break the rushing record today against them. And you know, I wasn't watching that game, but I remember the game breaks, like the highlights coming in like every 10 minutes from that game. Like, Jamal Lewis is still going. He said he was going to break it, and it looks like he's going to.
Folks, he is mashing that, right? Like, first carry, 82-yard touchdown. He had, the way it lined up that year, he had 500 rushing yards against the Browns.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, man, that was...
There's a little aside there.
That's a bit of a tangent, but it's such a good one.
We're allowed.
Yeah. So anyway, back to the stupid Saints and Buccaneers. I think this is a really good matchup for Chris Godwin, because PJ Williams, who did seem to play last week, I haven't been able to look at the snap counts yet, but he came back from injury, I think, and displaced Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, or however it goes, who had been the slot corner in his place for 2 weeks, and he did way better than P.J. Williams. So I think if P.J. Williams is in there, that's a green light for Godwin. But I guess it's worth keeping an eye on whether they give Chauncey Gardner-Johnson snaps at P.J. Williams' expense.
Okay, Gardner-Johnson was a pretty intriguing prospect, I think, out of Florida. P.J. Williams played 68 snaps last week.
Okay, well, if he keeps playing, that's great news for Godwin. But yeah, last
people
week...
People are going to talk about Mike Evans, too, because what happened in New Orleans earlier this season, right?
What do you mean?
I think his goose egg was against the Saints.
Right, Lattimore is just one of those things. I feel like he's limited in practice. It might be worth keeping an eye on his status closer to Sunday. But I think that's one of those things where, as much as you would much rather see a different corner than Lattimore coming up for the matchup, it's also one of those deals where Evans will beat him sometimes. It's just Lattimore is going to win some of the games, and Evans is going to win some of them. If anything, Evans losing the last round would just make me suspect he's that much closer to his next win, you know? So I don't envision myself going at Evans a whole lot in DFS this week. Maybe I'll rethink that, but I just think it'll be a lot easier for Chris Godwin. And I think Chris Godwin bounces back, but then again, I thought the same thing last week, and Jameis managed to not do a whole lot against a really bad Cardinals pass defense.
OJ Howard got more involved, though.
Yeah, he got more involved.
He looked great.
Yeah, he's awesome. It's just a joke that Bruce Arians can't think of a way to use him. But with that said, I'm not getting my hopes up that high for him. I'd love to be proven wrong, because I invested quite a bit in OJ Howard this year, but I think he produced last week in spite of the circumstances around him, and I think generally there is an enduring conspiracy against him.
Yeah, so I don't expect things to carry over necessarily, but it would be nice to start to see things carry over when it comes to Howard. Let's get on to maybe the greatest game of the week. That's the Redskins going up against the Jets.
Yeah, so this is such a stupid combination of teams, really loathsome organizations. Washington, just because of Dan Snyder. The Jets, not quite as like contemptible in a moral sense as
Dan
Snyder.
They're more like clown, laughy type of franchise.
It's just ridiculous, and honestly, it's not funny. It's just tedious at this point. It's like, it's not funny to be this bad this long all the time. It was funny for a while, but now it's just kind of irritating, especially because they're screwing with Darnold in his developments, because it's weird. I feel like this is three games in a row now where Darnold basically came out really fast and scored, I think, maybe on each of the first three drives in those games. And I have to assume in the final three quarters, so let's say the final nine quarters of those three games, I would be surprised if he threw for more than a combined 300 yards between them. He completely falls asleep after the first one or two drives, and that's with easy matchups, so that it's an easy matchup again here against Washington in terms of some of the secondary pieces. That it's better than nothing, but I can't take much for granted, especially when there's the front seven kind of pass rushing personnel they have on that Washington defense, which it's a bad defense, but they've got some good players in the front seven, and Kerrigan especially. But don't know what the latest was with Jonathan Allen and some of those guys, but Ioannidis is good. It can go wrong, you know, even though it should be easy. I'd like to see Robbie Anderson get more involved, but I think if he doesn't, I feel like if he keeps running on the left side, he might see more of Dunbar than Norman, who I think plays on the left side of the defense, if I remember right, in which case Demaryius Thomas might be running against him more often. Jamison Crowder is another totally decent matchup. Again, he's been good at least,
yes,
despite Darnold's struggles. So I think you can be hopeful for him. There's the revenge game narrative to keep in mind. I don't know. I picked the Jets, I guess, but I don't want to pick either team because they're both just insanely stupid. And on the Washington side, the most interesting thing, I guess, Terry McLaurin is a really good matchup. I think even with Dwayne Haskins at quarterback, McLaurin might be able to get going in this game.
Do you think Haskins can show anything against this Jets defense? I mean,
I think so. They don't have anything.
They need to. Or yeah. He needs to.
Yeah, I think I'm not going to be picking him in any tournaments or anything, but I am reasonably optimistic of him finishing this game with something like, I don't know, like 16 of 28 for 250 yards and a touchdown or two touchdowns and no turnovers. But if so, it'll have to be sprung by a couple of big plays to McLaurin, but it should be there. The outside coverage has been really bad all year with the Jets, and McLaurin, despite some pretty bad conditions, has made a lot of impressive plays so far. So I'm optimistic for him, definitely well on the tournament radar at least. But otherwise, Darius Geis stepping into the picture is kind of interesting. Adrian Peterson, of course, is playing pretty well. He's not going to disappear. But if Geis can just kind of get his foot in the door, he can kind of just keep forcing his way in more and more as time passes. Because if healthy, and that's, I realize, a big qualifier because he just hasn't been healthy, but if he is healthy, he's closer to a Nick Chubb kind of talent than he is like a Kerryon Johnson kind of talent, as far as keeping it within the lens of that draft that they were all in. So yeah, if Geis is healthy, he's just different than most running backs, and I don't know if people tend to grasp that, or if they kind of just look at him as, you know, the same kind of prospect as whatever Montgomery or Miles Sanders. It's like, no, he's way better than those guys if he's healthy.
Yeah, exactly. It is a matter of health there, because he coming out of college was, you know, I would say the number three running back.
Better than Fournette at LSU, I think.
Yeah, he ran better than him. He has, I think, LSU's single game rushing record. Just really, really impressive player. So hopefully, if health permitting, he can start to take off starting this week. Let's jump over. I feel like these teams just played, but they're playing again. We got the Niners going up against the Cardinals. We were right on the Cardinals last week, putting up some numbers for fantasy purposes. Kyler Murray looked really good. Christian Kirk obviously crushed it last week. And even Andy Isabella got in on the action a little bit as well. On the 49ers side, obviously the Monday night game this past week, they're on a short week, but they are at home. Garoppolo showed some warts in that one, but he also looked really good against the Cardinals last time out there. So I tend to believe that Garoppolo bounces back this week against the Cardinals more so than the Cardinals adjusting and making Garoppolo look pedestrian.
I think that might be pending the status of Emmanuel Sanders, though, because it looks That's like true. Kittle might be out again, too. Uh-oh. And if they're down Kittle and Emmanuel Sanders, then like even as a general Garoppolo pessimist at this point, I would have to admit, like, it'd be like unfair to expect him to have a big game like the last time if he doesn't have Sanders, who, you know, was specifically beating Patrick Peterson in that game. If Sanders isn't out there, that makes things kind of dicey. I don't know what to make of the wide receiver rotation with the 49ers. It doesn't make much sense to me the way Shanahan has handled it. But
feels like Debo's a constant at the very
Debo's
least.
Definitely the lead receiver if Emmanuel Sanders is out. The question is, who's the second and the third, and where are all of them going to line up? Because if Debo plays outside, then he'll get the shadow coverage, I think, of Patrick Peterson. And as much as Debo's looked good lately, it's a lot different to produce against Patrick Peterson than it is against Trey Flowers and Nico Thorpe or whoever the Seahawks have, very bad corners. And there's a couple things that could happen, though. Debo could stay outside and get shadowed by Peterson, or in the event that Sanders is out, Shanahan could specifically just make Samuel line up in the slot more than he has in other games this year. And Shanahan shows, I think, some matchup sensibility, like some adaptability with his play calling. Like, I noticed something in Emmanuel Sanders' splits from the last game. They got him, Emmanuel Sanders, lined up more on the left before he got hurt. And I think that was specifically because they were targeting Emmanuel Sanders on Trey Flowers and then Thorpe. But then, of course, he got hurt with a very weird looking injury. Like, he was just running and grabbed his chest and like left the field immediately. And they're calling it a rib injury, but it's like, that sounds almost like an oblique kind of thing or something. I don't know how the hell.
The Sanders injury?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked very, yeah, he did just kind of grab at his rib cage and, you know, so maybe an intercostal strain perchance.
Yeah, he must have pulled something or ripped up some cartilage. I don't know what it was.
I can't imagine that feels very good.
Well, yeah, that was what was weird too, is like he seemed to be like in a lot of pain too. It didn't seem like he was just like, oh, I can't quite turn the way I need to. He was just like, he just like grabbed his chest and was like, I have to leave.
Yeah, I mean, football players have said that, you know, when they have like the bruised or the busted ribs, that it's one of the more like just debilitating as far as just like simple human function type of thing. So if Sanders is dealing with anything like that, you know, it could be something that keeps him out.
Yeah. So but if he is out and if Shanahan does use Debo more in the slot, that's still a smash spot for Debo then, because running in the slot, what's his name? Byron Murphy did pretty good against Chris Godwin last week, but, you know, 2 weeks in a row in a new position, and either way, as far as Debo's interests go, it's easier to get open against Byron Murphy than it is Patrick Peterson. So you can hope for that. But if he does stay outside, then maybe Kendrick Bourne is the slot guy. And at 3,000 on DraftKings, he's very interesting to me, even though I don't think he's very good. He had two really brutal drops last week. He had drops issues last year. But Kyle Shanahan loves him, and Kyle Shanahan hates Dante Pettis.
These are facts. So, yeah, Bourne at least seems to have a role that I was surprised to, at the very least, see him at the minimum price there. As far as Arizona goes, Murray looked pretty good last time out against them. What kind of adjustments do you think the Niners make this time around?
I don't really know, because Christian Kirk has been playing the right outside position more lately. That's where he lit up the Buccaneers. That's where Sherman plays, though, and I think he played the same spot 2 weeks or three, however long it's been, ago, and Sherman shut him down in that game. Even with Kyler Murray getting a little momentum in the second half, it's like Kirk didn't do anything in that game. The slot coverage is not easy against the 49ers because Kaywan Williams is having a good season, so it's hard to see why it would be easy for Fitz. Isabella might need to step up again because those guys, as much, by the way, I do give Kirk a decent chance of beating Sherman. I just don't know if it's, I don't like it enough when taking into account the pass rush with that specifically happening, because he needs to get further downfield than he did playing in the slot. And Sherman can just kind of hold you for the first 8 yards of your route, or 15, depending on how much the refs just like the way he holds receivers.
They love it.
But Kirk is a really good route runner. He's a really quick twitch kind of guy. And being lanky and grabby, Richard Sherman could kind of just get turned around at some point, and Kirk could do something that way. But it's not going to be easy because Sherman is playing well this year, and the pass rush just doesn't give you very long to complete your route. So it's a really tough spot for Murray. I think I generally expect it to go a little worse than last time, to be honest.
Yeah, because last time was at home. This one is going to be on the road against a Niners team that was just dealt its first loss of the season. They're going to want to make that.
He's
right.
Awesome, though. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, Matt Breida looks like he's out. Raheem Mostert, they're listing him as questionable, right? Or he's showing as limited in practice or whatever. But I think he has to play. And if not, then I guess Jeff Wilson could be interesting. But yeah, Tevin Coleman looks like he might have to do something like 16, 18 carries in this game. But the Cardinals' run defense isn't bad. It's a lot easier to throw on them.
Jeff Wilson one time vomited on the field of a North Texas game, and it was one of the funnier things I've ever seen watching football.
Did he do it like multiple times? I remember there was something unusual about this. It was because he was like standing in the backfield, right?
Yeah, he's
and just threw
right
the face mask like right mm-hmm. in the middle of the
yeah he was in position and everything, and then all of a sudden it just flies out.
It's too bad. It's awesome. That would have been such a great opportunity to have, you know, if he had snapped it and then vomited like the general direction of the ball, and everyone at once is just like, ew, and then the defense picks it up, runs for a touchdown even though it's covered in puke. That'd be funny, right?
That would have been funny.
Yeah. So maybe he can get the Benny Hill theme song going in this game and puke on somebody, make it a good one.
I hope so. It's just so funny when that happens.
But otherwise the backfield is just hell in Arizona now with Kenya Drake and David Johnson. They really should get David Johnson just playing receiver.
I benched David Johnson last week in NFFC, and I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know what you can do with it.
It's I'm done with it. He's out in my mind. All right, let's move on over to the Raiders going up against the Bengals. 10.5 points. The Raiders are favored by.
Wow,
that's too many points to give the Raiders.
Maybe not. I am a Ryan Finley hater. I do think the Raiders defense, even the Raiders defense, could do pretty well there, but LaMarcus Joyner's had a really bad year for the Raiders so far, and I think he was out last week. I don't know if he's back this week. I don't know if it would even be good for the Raiders if he were. I'm trying to load that injury report at the moment. Looks like Joyner did not practice yesterday. Don't know what that means for Sunday at this point, but it should be one of the better matchups for Tyler Boyd in like a month, something like that.
I'll keep the faith on Tyler Boyd despite all evidence to the contrary.
I don't know. I mean, if you can catch six passes against Marlon Humphrey last week, then going against Joyner or his backup, whoever that is, it could go a lot worse. With that said, also it's worth keeping in mind, it's probably easier to throw on the Raiders, than it is to run on them. So that's...
The Bengals can't run it anyway.
Yeah, Mixon got going a little bit last week, but as we've seen in other games, he can truly leave you with a goose egg. So it should be a little easier to run, to pass than to run. So that's good for Tyler Boyd, Auden Tate, I guess Alex Erickson, technically, even though I was kind of hoping to just kind of refuse to acknowledge that he exists. I just don't understand what's going on over there. He should not be outproducing Tyler Boyd. Happened twice in the past month. I think it's going to stop. I'm praying for my own sanity that it stops in this game. But otherwise, I think it's time for Darren Waller to bounce back. I like Waller quite a bit this week. And Tyrell, I think, generally lines up in this. If I remember right, anyway, he generally lines up where William Jackson is. And they could just move him to the other side. The Bengals don't shadow anybody. But if they do leave him over on Jackson too much, that would maybe push a funnel toward Waller a little bit, maybe Hunter Renfro a little bit. But yeah, Josh Jacobs chalk week, and it's pretty difficult to argue against it.
Yeah, I love Jacobs this week. I think everybody does. But, unlike David Montgomery just completely screwing me over last week, I feel confident that that Jacobs will get this one going.
Yeah, as much as I was kind of a hater of both as prospects, I definitely have Jacobs ahead of Montgomery. And I think that also Jacobs has probably more help, a lot more help. So his offensive line's way better.
His quarterback's not Mitch Trubisky.
His quarterback is not Mitch Trubisky. So, yeah, it should be a really nice spot for Josh Jacobs. I might do a tournament lineup on DraftKings with Jalen Richard, though, just because I can imagine the Raiders covering this, actually, if my Finley hate is true.
And Richard, I don't need to tell you this, but he's a great source of just picking up a few cheap catches and getting some production that way. So
the playing time fluctuated all year, and it's really frustrating because he's still being super efficient like he always has as a pass catcher. And even with Renfro, Tyrell, Waller there stepping up, I really feel like they could have used him more, but maybe this game, maybe not. But if not now, then probably never.
Yeah, the Bengals can really make you answer that question. Let's move on over to the Patriots going up against the Eagles. Patriots, 3.5-point road favorites.
This is gonna
suck. I think the Patriots just absolutely drag them.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so I can imagine this being really ugly for both teams just because the weather looks like it might not be super cooperative there. It might be a little cold, a little windy, and I just am not convinced that Brady can throw much downfield, and if he can't, if there isn't a credible downfield threat, maybe the Eagles can be a respectable pass defense if they only have to cover 15 yards of the field. Maybe not. Maybe that's giving them too much credit, but I think you can both still really like a guy like Mohamed Sanu as kind of especially a cash game kind of play, because he's really cheap, I feel like, especially on FanDuel. I don't remember what he was on DraftKings, but the PPR there, he caught 14 passes or whatever it was in that other game. So Sanu's going to get targets. I just don't know if he's going to make enough big plays for it to really matter on the scoreboard. Like, I think he'll be good in PPR especially, but he might have like an 8-catch, 72-yard kind of game. And I can imagine this one ending something like 21-17. And I kind of... honestly, kind of like the Eagles a little bit for the upset, just because I can imagine this getting reduced to a running game duel. And if it does, I definitely prefer the Eagles side, both because I like their running backs better, and because it's a lot easier to run on the Patriots than it is the Eagles, generally speaking.
Yeah, definitely. The Patriots, if there is one knock against their defense, it's definitely against the run. I think if you're the Eagles, you want to limit the amount of deep passes that Wentz is going to be throwing in that one.
Their offense is so bad as a passing. So that's the way I guess it could go wrong, because, yeah, they're down probably Alshon Jeffrey, who wasn't playing that great anyway, probably wouldn't have done anything anyway in this game. But they're going to have to go with a two tight end base, which on the one hand, it speaks to how bad the situation is at receiver. But on the other, it might make them better. It might be their best option anyway.
So the Ravens basically used against the Patriots.
Yeah, and I mean, Goddard, Ertz, it's a lot better to throw to them than it is Nelson Aguilar or Mac Hollins or Jordan Matthews. It's just a joke how bad those receivers are.
What does Jordan Matthews have on the Eagles front office?
Honestly, I don't even really know why he just burned out the way he did. It was just he was never, you know, a star or whatever, but I thought he looked okay with the Eagles. Then he kind of disappeared. I still think J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is going to be really good, but yeah, apparently the media tone around the Eagles leads you to think Matthews will actually play this week.
Okay, wow. So that's going to be an accelerated run for him.
Brutal spot for Wentz, though. Just awful.
Yeah, really bad. So I think I just still side with the Patriots on this one, and especially coming off the bye. I know they are on the road, and I know the weather could limit some of the downfield passing, like you said, but I also feel like, in general, the Patriots function best on those short to intermediate throws, and they can still make the Eagles pay enough that way, and I think the Eagles aren't going to be able to score that many points. I think that they could be at risk of scoring, like, you know, anywhere between 13 and 20 points.
I just think that, especially if Brady struggles to move the ball downfield, this game could really suit Jordan Howard, especially if the Eagles are going two tight end pretty much every play.
Okay, so that's the way that the Eagles could pull this one off. But I tend to side with the Patriots.
That's totally
we'll agree to disagree on this one. Let's move on over to the Rams going up against the Bears. Last year's game was, you know, kind of a coming out party for the Bears. They really just kind of dominated the Rams on national television. This game doesn't have nearly the intrigue. The season hasn't gone nearly as well for either of those teams. The Rams, I don't know what to say about them at this point.
You blew it.
Tim Heidecker face. And then the Bears, yeah, they had a pulse last week against a Jeff Driskel-led Lions team. I'm not sure that I'm buying it this time around going up against the Rams. I can't give the Rams 6.5
points. That's too many points.
Yeah, that's too much. Let's get into the fantasy aspects of this one, though. What are you expecting there?
So I definitely think the Rams win it, but that's speaking more toward just how low of the expectations I have for Trubisky. And as much as I think David Montgomery is doing a good job, the Rams' run defense has been better this year, and I think they can become very good in the event that they sell out against the run, which I assume that's the explanation for Montgomery's bad game last week. Is like, everybody can run on the Lions, but nobody has run on the Lions yet with Mitch Trubisky as their quarterback, have they? And then
I learned that lesson the hard way.
But yeah, it's a similar thing here. It's like the Rams, to start with, have a pretty good run defense, and now they go into a setting where they can really just tee off against it. As long as you just put some safety help over the top to make sure Gabriel doesn't run past somebody, and as long as you have somebody on Allen Robinson to just at least hopefully tackle him on the catches that Trubisky does manage to get vaguely in his vicinity, then you can probably just, over the long course of the game, just choke out the Bears, because like, they're not going to just, you know, start putting touchdowns up on you. They're just going to probably resort to field goals that they miss and things like that. So, yeah, on the other hand, I agree. 6.5 is a lot, and it could work. Like, I guess they could just get defensive touchdowns. Good to see Mitch if you want to do that. And the Rams' pass rush is pretty lively. They've got some playmakers. So they could, but I think they'll need a defensive touchdown to get 6.5, because as much as Todd Gurley should have scoring opportunities, as much as the, you know, Cooper Kupp will bounce back, somebody will do something at receiver, it's just hard to see Goff. I think it was was it Mike Tagliere? I don't know how to pronounce his name. Sorry. Had that tweet last week about how if you go back to the playoffs, I want to say last year, or maybe it was like week 15 last year, something like that. But from wherever that point in time was to then last week, Trubisky had actually like the same numbers as Goff.
Ooh.
Yeah.
One of those guys had a major contract signed during that time.
Yeah. And then so that
At least Chicago isn't married to Mitch Trubisky forever.
Nor did they trade two first-round picks for a contract year corner.
Yeah, they just keep...
Les Snead is really bad at his job. I don't know if there's more than five GMs in the NFL who are anything better than a complete buffoon. Like, these guys are... It's really ambitious the ways that they fail and just screw up really easy things. It's like guys like Jason Licht in Tampa, the guy with Arizona. It's just a real golden era of
Steve
morons.
Kime.
Yeah, yeah. It's just stunning how stupid some of these guys can be with really easy questions. But anyway, I think they still beat the Bears this week just because of Mitch being Mitch.
Yep, Mitch being Mitch seals it for me as well. Let's get on to the Monday night game here. 52 is the over-under in this Chiefs-Chargers game. It'll be played in Mexico City. Should be fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be... I feel like I can take the liberty of just saying without looking that Mahomes does well against the Chargers. I know Tyreek Hill does, and that makes sense because Casey Hayward is often the reason, the main reason, that the Chargers' pass defense does well whenever it does well. But he can't match up with Tyreek Hill even a little bit. Like, even when it goes well for Casey Hayward, he's more of a... He's closer to like a cover two kind of corner. Not that he is. He's a good man coverage corner, but he can't run downfield. He's like a 4-5-5 kind of guy. Tyreek Hill will lose him with ease. They have to give Hayward help if he's on Tyreek. Desmond King in the slot generally does a good job, but there's just so much speed on that field. It'll be interesting to see if they start giving more snaps to Mecole because he just...
That touchdown last week.
Yeah.
Gracious.
Yeah, that was pretty nice. Sammy Watkins, I feel like they're just using him in the Chris Conley role, which is kind of frustrating to me because he should be moving downfield more often, and they keep throwing him these short, like 8 yards kind of targets. And I'm sure Andy Reid has his reason. I'm sure it plays, you know, some significant role in making the broader product the way it is. But it's like, I don't know, Watkins isn't going to get going the way they've been using him. He hasn't been dropping passes, but it hasn't been efficient with his targets. Whereas with Mecole, at least, I don't know if it's because they use him a different way. He just keeps making plays with his snaps. And it's like, if you're not going to get more from Watkins for his snaps, you might want to seriously consider giving some more to Hardman, maybe taking away from DeMarcus Robinson too. I don't know. I still don't think you can use Mecole in season long because he's making it work on like one target and 15 snaps a game. So that's not sustainable. But if he's on Hayward, he can really dust him too. Like, these corners can't run with Mecole or Watkins or Hill.
He's got 21 catches this year. 7 have gone for more than 20 yards. 3 of them have gone for more than 40 yards.
Yeah, and a lot of it's like after the catch too. He would have, and that's not even counting the one that LeSean McCoy screwed up with that holding penalty back in like week 5 or whatever.
That's when I begged for LeSean McCoy to be cut on the spot.
yeah, so that was rough. I hope the Chiefs keep rolling with Damian Williams. That's just mostly selfish reasons, but I also think there's overwhelming...
Those are the best kind.
I think there's overwhelming evidence, though, that he's their best running back. I think it's just silly to argue otherwise, and I hope Andy Reid sticks with Damian because I think he showed last week and the week before that fumble aside, he is running pretty well right now.
Okay, and then on the Chargers side of things here, Keenan Allen is consistent as ever. Still waiting on Mike Williams to get it going. I thought last
it has
week
to happen
was the
this
spot.
Week.
I mean, yeah,
he had like 10 touchdowns on 40 catches or whatever last year, and now he has 0 on 40 this year. Like,
he's the guy that yells out regression's favorite player.
Yeah, so I think though that regression it's due to swing the other way eventually. Like, he's going to at some point have 4 touchdowns on 20 catches or something like that, and it's like, the time is closer. It's closer than it's ever been. That was true last week, and it didn't happen anyway, but like, it has to happen in the next couple weeks.
He did well against the Chiefs last year, too.
Okay, cool.
It's always 1-1, but...
But yeah, I think, I don't know, that Chiefs defense has some good players in the front 7, but Frank Clark is playing hurt. Don't know what he can be expected to do, but Chris Jones total monster, and that Chargers offensive line has had enough issues this year that I do worry about Jones just kind of doing the trash compactor to those guys the way he's done to a lot of people.
I mean, if Max Crosby and Cleveland Farrell are eating you alive, then yeah, Chris Jones.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, so that could go poorly for Rivers and company there on Monday night. Let's wrap things up for today's show. Andrew Laird and Scott Genstead will carry you on the Friday episode of the RotoWire Fantasy Sports Podcast, or RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by Yahoo and Yahoo Daily Fantasy Sports.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.